For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to The Promised Land, a show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min Podcast Network, a special YouTube live show we are doing. The second one in about a week, but things are happening around Manchester United. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by Rob Blanchett, as usual. As we say, special show. I think we'll still be back Friday, Rob, to look ahead to the next show, if you can do it, of course. But
why not?
We do have. It's been quite a day, hasn't it? In the sense of Sir Jim has done his first appearance and he has answered any question that has been put to him about the ownership of Manchester United, his part in how Manchester United are going to move forward. Obviously, we had the official communication around about 24 hours ago, as we record this, of that ratification and full completion of his 27.7% acquisition of Manchester United. But Rob, I haven't let you talk yet. You're right.
Yeah, I'm good. A kind of exciting day, isn't it? Like, we don't get excited about executives and all of this, but it does matter, doesn't it, to us, because we cover all this ground all the time. So yes, 24 hours ago the news broke and we obviously finally ratified, and Jim Ratcliffe now part owner of Manchester United officially, and the official statement's going out. And we knew today that there would be some official line to the press as well, so we knew that was coming. I think what we didn't realize was coming, Scott, was just the kind of depth that he was willing to go into. And just a kind of anything goes question. I think one of the things that was actually put to him by a journalist was, you do realize how strange we find this, because Manchester United haven't spoken to us like this in 20 years. And you've just done more in one afternoon at Ineos's offices in the boardroom. So, yeah, lots to cover today, because obviously I think Jim Ratcliffe really spilt his guts as to what he thinks about Manchester United and how he wants to take the club forward. But just also, I think, giving us tidbits on maybe some corners and stuff that we haven't spoken about as much, and his own opinions of that as someone now who directly influences everything that happens at Manchester United.
Yeah, we're going to dig through stuff that he has said. There's, I think, social media is going mad with things that he's said, whether he's talking about Sheikh Jassim and whether he exists, or which I think was quite interesting. Tons to get into. We'll divide it as best we can into a few sections. We're never going to be able to cover everything in this. There's going to be lots of fallout, but we'll try our very best. And obviously, this will be available on audio as well afterwards. So please subscribe on Apple and Spotify if you have not done so already. If you're watching us on YouTube as we record this and you haven't subscribed, please do. The Promised Land of Manchester United podcast, and you should like the video, subscribe, leave a comment, and hit the notification bell so you never miss a show. And you can also follow Rob and I on... Oh, Rob, we've just had a request to show us your vinyl collection, but we'll get to that in a second. You can follow us on social media at @_ScottSaunders on X, Instagram, TikTok, @_Rob_BeOnX and YouTube, and @TPLMUFC on X as well. Pedro Camino says, Rob, show us your vinyl collection. I collect as well. Unless you can pick something out specifically.
Oh, I don't know. There's you can't see it, but it goes all the way up there about 12 foot. So what you can see here times by another 2 or 3 up there. So maybe on a show one day when I'm a bit more prepared, I'll have the camera proper and I'll lift it up and show people all of my vinyl collection.
Pedro also says, finally, first time I catch a show live. Greetings from Florida. Greetings to you. Reina says, a live stream on a Wednesday. What a nice surprise. Yeah, I mean, we have said that we will try our best to get to you when things are breaking. And we could have done this earlier today, but I've had quite a busy day. And unfortunately, I have I've had other work commitments to attend to today. And it's probably for the benefit of the show. I will also say we've moved into a new office at 90 Min Towers today. Very nice. We have a new studio. We have a new podcast studio. So maybe you won't see my office / spare room in the background anymore. And we'll be looking a little bit more dapper, a little bit more professional in the weeks to come. But yes, plenty to dig into today. Ten Hog 7 says, Sir Jim, getting under the skin of every rival on day one. Please make us great again. And Jace says, Jace 711 says, the adults are finally in the room. # Sir Jim. And I've got to be honest, Rob, like as we said at the top, before we get into anything he said, the fact that he said anything is
positive.
A massive thing, isn't it? I think
it's
so weird. Like I was coming home and seeing the guy who owns Man United on Man United social channels, video of him talking about Man United, which imagine Joel Glazer doing that.
Well, I can't imagine Joel Glazer.
You can't, can you? Never would happen.
And also, you referring to Manchester United, the entity of Manchester United and the football fans of Manchester United as us. You know, he's a fan. You know, he talks extensively today about why he supported Manchester United, obviously growing up in the area. And just a really big kind of bell ringing operation, Scott, about the North, saying the North deserves more and people from the North pay their taxes. And there was a lot of this drum banging. And I actually think he got asked that. I went, well, so Jim, don't you pay taxes in the UK anymore? And he was like, well, I paid taxes for 65 years and now I went and live somewhere where there's a bit more sun. Sorry about that. I thought I quite like that. Yeah,
I quite like that actually.
That was all right. You know, it's like I get why people, you know, it's not like he's, you know, has never paid tax in the UK or anything like that. But I think the fact that he was banging the drum, I should say, for people of the North and in the Northwest, I thought was a really good thing, because it's part of the bigger story here about as to why, you know, we kind of favoured him as an owner over maybe other entities that maybe do not exist. But existing is the first bit, isn't it, that matters, Scott?
Yes, it is indeed. So I'm just checking my Twitter replies. I said, we're recording this during a Champions League, by the way. Arsenal playing. If you're listening to this on Thursday, we're doing this during the Champions League. And I said, essentially, this is, I've no interest in the Champions League. Like it's lost its shine a bit. I know because United have gone out, but
I forgot it was on.
Exactly. But hey, the most important story of the day is what's happening at Man United. Now, Jim Ratcliffe has sat down with Written Press. There's video of him on the BBC. There's video of him on United social channels. You can read everything that he said. You don't have to look too far. I'm sure all the aggregator accounts on Twitter will be giving you, spoon feeding you like snippets of what he said for about 5 months to come. But yeah, plenty to dig into. We'll look at his ambition, the Dan Ashworth situation, Erik ten Hag, the Glazers, Qatar, Mason Greenwood, and the stadium throughout today's show. Plenty to get into. But yeah, I suppose maybe the three-year ambition. Let's start with that, Rob. So I am paraphrasing. I'm going to paraphrase everything here because there's so much that he said. It's just really impossible to, you know, just... And you don't, let's face it, you don't want me to read out a lot of this. I'm sure you can read it, or you prefer to listen to him say it himself. So if you'd like to do that, go and watch it. But he was asked about how long it will take to turn around. And there was a comment about, will it take 10 years? And he essentially said, 10 years is a bit too long for people to wait. I think it's more realistic that we look at 2 or 3 years. He also ruled out next season and playing like Manchester City at this point next year is essentially impossible because there's a lot of structural things to implement and fix. But you know, Rob, we the way that we do this podcast, we're not like shouty, fix it now, fix it yesterday. We've always said this will take time. You just need to be patient with it. And I think that he hasn't echoed us because obviously we'll be echoing him, you know, but he has essentially said,
Scott, who knows?
He watches the show. He obviously does. He's picked up a lot of things from the Promised Land pod, but that is the thing I like most about this is just how measured he is and how real he essentially is. And yeah, I'm going to say like, hey, Man City played some of the best football I've ever seen, or the best football I've ever seen in the semi-final of the Champions League last year against Real Madrid. They absolutely smashed them. And we'd like to play like that, but we're nowhere near that. We can't play like that at the moment. It's going to take a few years. And two or three years, I think, is fair, isn't it?
I think it's fair. And I think it was very interesting that he kind of grasped that number, 3 years, because when it was put forward to him 10 years, I think people are trying to marry that up with the idea around the regeneration around Old Trafford, or, you know, the stadium plans and all of these things. But when you take it to the football, it's like, how long, as I said last week, how long is a piece of string? Well, with football, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you can be successful 1 minute and fall off the cliff the next. It's the way it goes. What I do like, Scott, and you said the word there, real. That's what I like about him, is that this is all within the realms of realism. This isn't just a dream. It's not a pipe dream. It's not designed just in terms of image. I'm sure Sir Jim Ratcliffe will have a huge upside in that. In, if he's the guy that is the Manchester United saviour in years to come, of course, he will be remembered as that. But it's actually having proper constructive plans. And there was just one little tidbit that came out of it, Scott, that, like, you know, just straight away, something we said in the show the other day. Erik ten Hag at the moment reports to the CEO, and he said straight away, he was like, no manager should be reporting to your CEO. That's just wrong. And when I look at Man United, it's that kind of stuff that I kind of go, what's going on there? Like, this is not how proper football clubs, it's not how business operates.
Was that a dig at the Glazers, Rob?
Well, I think there was quite a few things here where obviously he was really straight about Manchester United being an underperforming entity for the last 10 years. And he was really straight on one side about us being a fan. He was like, it's been horrible to watch. And then on the business side of it, he was a little bit more, you know, business hat on. And he was like, well, commercial areas are doing okay and all this, but the truth is the stadium's not very good. I think that's almost like his direct words. He said something about having a campus around Old Trafford, which is something
he called the stadium tired. He called it tired.
Yeah, he called it tired. And I think that he was confronted a couple of times, especially on the BBC interview, about, well, whose fault is that? And he was just like, well, my job's not really to talk about whose fault it is. And I'm actually with him, because we know it's the Glazers. He doesn't need to come out and, like, slam the Glazers. Now, I'm sure Man United fans, a certain quarter, that would love that, would love some kind of needle straight away. But I think he really showed that he's developed this relationship with the Glazer brothers, obviously Joel and Avram. And he kind of said, I haven't met any of the others. He went, I haven't met any other Glazers. He went, I've just met those two. And the issues all of this time were non-executive directors. So that was a pop at the rest of the Glazer family, who all used to sit on the board. And obviously he's been acquiring a lot of their shares. So,
it's funny, though, that there was a snippet a few months ago saying that they wouldn't criticize each other. And he's not doing it purposely, is he? But he's being, like, when I say he's being real about the issues that everybody sees. Yeah. And unfortunately, that is the fault of the people who own it.
Yeah, he can't be real and say, oh yeah, it's all great, and then in the other breath say, I'm changing everything. That's not real, is it? That's just lip service. I think it's quite normal in this kind of relationship scenario for two parties to sign disclaimers and say they're not going to publicly deface each other. Like, what is the point of that? There's no point in it at all. If Jim Ratcliffe wants Manchester United to be his, and, you know, again, the long-term plan here for Ineos, I think, is to take the club over 100%. That's down the road. That's how they view it, is that you have to make sure that this lot sell to you. And he even says there, when he talks about Qatar, he was like, I think the Glazers would have preferred to sell the club outright. But that wasn't on the table. That wasn't there, you know. And he tried to talk about, you know, he joked about Sheikh Jassim and about, you know, does he even exist? Because he said, like, we don't know who he is. We've tried to find out who he is. And it's the same for us in the press. We tried to find out who he is. So, I didn't expect him to say anything negative against the Glazers. But I think he was really real about the health of Manchester United. And he was like, everyone else has raced ahead of United, and United have been stuck in this kind of time warp for kind of 10 years. And he was like, I don't like it. You know, who likes it? I'm a Man United fan. No Man United fan could at all like what they've seen in the last 10 years. So that is down on the Glazers, isn't it? But I don't think the Glazers care about that, Scott. Like, if someone's coming in to fix it and their dividends go up a little bit more, I think they'll be quite happy.
I'm just going to interject here, Rob, and we're going to change direction. Like, we're going to completely go off-piste.
Go on.
Randy says MUFC statement on Shaw, Scott. So we just have had a statement on Luke Shaw. Luke Shaw sustained a muscle injury and will be out for an extended period. Further assessment is still needed to determine the severity, but we expect him to be absent for a few months. Let's just address that. I mean, we could talk about it on Friday, but since it's just fresh now, we may as well just look at this. He's played 45 minutes against Villa, got subbed. 45 minutes minus injury time against Luton, got subbed. Ten Hag has said, we know Luke Shaw's injury history. We want to make sure he doesn't get injured for a long period of time again. And he's got injured for a long period of time again. And now Man United don't have a left back. Just a quick reaction to that.
Well, we heard earlier today that it was 3 months. So before, obviously, that statement's obviously just only come out, but we'd heard from the centre that it was going to be around kind of 12 weeks. I think the thing is, Scott, there was a lot of fallout straight away on social media around it, saying, oh, United forced him back. And I think the criticism was of United's doctors and saying, oh, United's medical team are rubbish and this, that, and the other. The normal stuff that comes out when someone gets injured, you know, when you've got an injury crisis, it's obviously a doctor's fault. That's the way people look at it. I think the truth is that Luke Shaw put his hand up to play, wanted to play, and Erik ten Hag wanted him to play. So it comes down to those two human beings at the end of the day. They're the ones who will talk, and Luke Shaw will say, can I do it or can I not do it? And the manager will go along with what the player says generally. Now, they've obviously got all the advice from the medical people. I think this is a hamstring injury, so it's not the same injuries as other injuries he's had, but I'm not surprised that he's sustained a secondary injury. That's what happens, isn't it? It happens to every player. You come back too quickly and you get injured. So yes, hindsight's a beautiful thing, and it would have been nice to just sat him for a few more weeks and find a way. But then people will be saying, oh, Luke Shaw's not helping you. You know, Luke Shaw's rubbish. Luke Shaw's...
Also, there's no guarantee if you leave him for another 2 weeks anyway, he's not going to get injured. So
and it's a muscle injury. So like, it's a muscle injury. It can actually be completely fresh. It can be. So it could be bad luck. But I think the thing is, this is for me not a doctor's appointment blame or anything towards that at all. It's normally they'll train and the player will say if he can play or not, and then they'll have a sports science fitness report which will give them guidance on wider fitnesses or wider fitness of the player. And Luke Shaw wanted to play, so it's so difficult because United are in a situation, Scott, where they need their best players on the pitch. Luke Shaw is definitely one of them, and unfortunately now, like the Sandro Martinez, you're now going to lose him for another period of time.
While we're off-piste, I've just had something that said, Edin Terzic, Borussia Dortmund coach, Jadon Sancho knows he's got to do better.
Yeah, it's not going... Maybe we'll come back to
that one on Friday.
Yeah, something for Friday. I think it's quite interesting with Jadon is that it's not gone great for him there in the immediate days there back in Germany. I don't think that's proof of anything one way or the other. The player is useless or great or anything. I think, again, these things sometimes all mesh into one. But I think the truth is, Scott, there is that Man United want this boy to play so they can sell him. We need him to play so he can get minutes under his belt and get fit, and we can sell him and move on. Other than that, I think he'll be judged if he does really well in the Bundesliga next few weeks. It might be slightly different. But I think the truth is, obviously, United would like to sell him and use that fee, obviously, to regurgitate more transfers. Like today, one of the things that Ratcliffe talked about a lot was FFP. Talked about it a lot, and he was like, people have to understand Manchester United have spent a lot of money over the last few years and we have to kind of sort that out now. So, you know, Jadon Sancho is one of those big transfer fees and one of those big wages that has to be taken off the bill.
Like we say, being real, and obviously the way that he's spoken, I think it just... I know a lot of people do say it, but if you're the guy who owns you and is going to run football operations is essentially telling you, we spent money quite erroneously and we've not really done that well at selling players, and FFP means like you have to buy players well and sell players well in order to, you know, not really run the risk of breaking FFP rules. Mm. And I like a lot of what he said, and we'll talk about Dan Ashworth in a second. We talked about his three-year ambition. Sorry for the interjection with the Luke Shaw and Jadon Sancho little bits. Wondering,
can I just say one thing about the three-year thing, actually, just very quickly?
Yeah.
My personal opinion, 100%, is it will take longer than 3 years. So I think it's nice that he said 3 years, because I think that quells some of the anxiety from United fans, because they're like, how long, again, does this take? I think United have got more than 3 years worth of problems. I really do. Even with the changes that are so positive now, it's great having a new director of football, a sporting director, a new part owner, all of these heads that come in But the truth is, your playing squad is still nowhere near good enough. And he did say that today. He was really quite straight about that. He was like, we are behind Man City. They play this level of football because it's taken them 7-8 years to get this squad. Now, I think 3 years, I think, is, I don't know, that is blue sky thinking for me. I don't think that in 3 years, three lots of summer transfer windows, you are going to be a title challenging team, because that's what he was kind of lending itself to. Was like, we'd like to be in the Champions League by the end of the season. Again, not quite sure about that, Scott. 50-50 at the moment, I'd say. And then next year, you're going to have to invest quite heavily, but you can't because of FFP. So
I don't think it's impossible.
I don't think it's impossible.
Two, 3 years was about what I was thinking. But you think of how many points United are behind at the moment, and the big challenge that they have is selling, I think, because that is essentially the thing that will unlock the door to them being able to afford to bring in other players. Selling and clearing the wage bill. I think they might be able to do a bit of that in the summer. We'll see how good, how masterful they can be at raising a bit of money to reinvest in the summer. But obviously, they are treading that line of FFP PSR rules. So, you know, that's it is something. It's not going to be fixed tomorrow. If anybody's thinking it's going to be fixed tomorrow, it's just not going to be.
Did you see one more quote? He said, sorry about Nice. So it's just because it goes together here. And he said, we took Nice over. He said, and we made a real mess of that for 2 or 3 years. That's what he said. And it was like, it's refreshing for him to say that. He was like, we made really bad choices at Nice. He said, and we worked it out on the fly, and now we're in a better place. So I think there'll be a little bit of that at Man United, Scott. I think they have to feel their way around some of this, and that's why they're looking at these, you know, best-in-class people, you know, the Dan Ashworths and everyone who's already in the game, because they give you a little bit of leverage.
Wanderer and Propeller says, thanks for live pod, lads. Wouldn't have been surprised to hear Sir Jim come out with a not too high, not too low comment, which
I'd be suing.
Would have been that. Yeah, you can't say that.
But he's right. It was kind of not too high, not too low thing, wasn't it, today? Like, I think that was really the baseline. I thought was really nice.
Strongman Steve, hello again, says, we've become used to being kept in the dark by the owners, never any clarity or confirmation on anything that's happening within the club. And that's obviously how we started the show as well. One thing he was quite candid about was Dan Ashworth, though. Very interesting. I'm going to try and dig up a section here, and I'll read it back. I know I said I wouldn't do this 10 minutes ago, but I'm going to do it. Dan Ashworth is clearly one of the top sporting directors in the world. I've no doubt he's capable. He's interested in Man United because it's the biggest challenge at the biggest club in the world. And he doesn't shy away from that either. I love that about him as well. It would be different at City because you're maintaining a level. Here it's a significant rebuilding job. He would be a good addition. He needs to decide if he's going to make that jump. I haven't actually seen this. This is the first time I'm reading this part, actually. We've had words with Newcastle, who would be disappointed. They've done really well since their new ownership. I understand why they'd be disappointed. But you can't criticize Dan because it's a transient industry. He goes on to say about the 20 million asking price. Yes, it's a bit silly, personally. I won't get dragged into that. What I do think is completely absurd, suggesting a man who's really good at his job sits in his garden for 1.5 years. That's a fantastic little quote there. Really, really good. And do you know what though? Like, you know how United have been going into negotiations in the past, and like the word is, oh, Man United are coming along. Let's absolutely rinse them for all the money they've got, because they have people who are in that room who don't really know what they're doing. He ain't taking any crap.
There's a little caveat there. He talks about the Barada appointment from City, and he said, see, how it works is we went to Man City, had a grown-up conversation, and they agreed with us, and then he's now come to us. And he's like, and that's, he's kind of hinting that's what really Newcastle should do. Now, we know why Newcastle are not specifically doing that. As we said on our last show, 20 million is a ridiculous price. 10 million is a ridiculous price. And in UK law, you're not actually covered by those things. And he even says that at the end of his little statement there. He was like, at the end, he went, it's not actually how the UK works in terms of employment. So I don't know why people are like talking about it like that. And again, people have talked about it like a transfer. Like, United have gone knocking on the door and gone, oh, we want to buy Dan Ashworth from Newcastle. He's an executive. No, he can resign. He would
it's
be
posturing, Rob. It's all Newcastle. It's posturing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he would be at fault for penalties, no doubt about it. Like, you know, they could hold him to his contract for one reason or the other. But we're honestly only talking about hundreds of thousands of pounds or the low millions. We're not talking 10 or 20 million. I mean, it's not a football transfer. So I think people, again, are getting those two things you know, confused because it's football, but it's not football. It's not the transfer market. It's so completely different. And Man United should not be paying 20 million for any executive ever. We need to stop doing that rubbish of just giving money away to get stuff, because that's really what Ed Woodward did, really. Everything, how do I solve it? Throw some more money at it. Don't solve it. I'll throw some more money at it. I'll sack another manager. Let's start again. So I'm not down with that. I think you know, it's quite interesting as well there, Scott, that he talked about Dan Ashworth in the tense of Dan Ashworth wants to come here. It wasn't like we want Dan Ashworth. It was like Dan Ashworth wants to come to Man United. It's a shame for Newcastle that. And it's like, okay, you put
isn't
in
that the kind of bravado though that you want? Because everybody knows it's the case. If you're an United fan, right, you know that's the case. It's just the version of United we've seen in the last 10 or 11 years is a damaged version of what it should be. And people seem to forget the version of United that Ferguson made and the 20 years that preceded that. People forget that.
Yeah, and I don't even think it is bravado. I think it's just reality. And I think like the reality is, and like again, you said from the beginning about Dan Ashworth coming, Scott, you were like, I think Man United are the team that could turn him. And I was the one going, I don't think so. You know, look, I think Newcastle have got too much money. But the truth is that if you've got someone like Jim Ratcliffe behind the scenes with a really strong core of people there already in, you know, like, click of your fingers, it looks completely different as terms of a boardroom, is that you can go out into the market and get what you want. Players, individuals, you can work with agents in a different way. You can really put your front foot forward and be aggressive without being horrible, if you know what I mean. Like, you don't have to be smarmy about it. You don't have to be a show off. You just go, well, this is who we are, and we know who we are. And I think that's really what came across today, was that he was like,
identity, right?
Yeah, identity, absolutely. And he talked a lot about Fergie and what Fergie did before, and he talked about Fergie being a winner, and he said, that's why we're here. We have the same mentality as Sir Alex Ferguson. We are here for that reason. We're not here to take part. We're here to kind of win, and that's what we'll be judged on. I like that as well, Scott. He said that a few times. He was like, we know 100% if we fail here, we'll be judged on that, and that's not something we want. So we're going to do everything to make sure that we don't fail. I think sometimes that fear you see drives you more than just the trophy at the end of the rainbow, you know, the League Cup, or we've won a trophy. No, I think it's actually success is a long-term thing. And I think that he spoke about that very eloquently today.
John Taylor says, 15 million loan for Lingard was ridiculous. Yep. Like, John, I'm not sure if you're a United fan or you're a Newcastle fan. You just joined just because we're talking about United. But
what was the 15 million loan? What football? In what way? What to West Ham?
It was Newcastle, wasn't it? But at the same time,
he's a footballer.
Also, we are talking about, like, you can say it was ridiculous, and yes, it probably was. But at the same time, he's coming in and replacing the team that were asking for that. Like,
yeah.
All of this stuff that's happened over the last few years, all of these like stupid transfer fees and these stupid requests are no more. Like,
yeah, look,
I think this is the problem is that United have been making these decisions for too long. And he's essentially out here telling the club's official channels, this club's been making bad decisions. We need to reverse the bad decisions that they've made.
Yeah. And also, like, you can, football's relative. So, like, we can talk about Harry Maguire being £80 million and a world record fee.
That should never happen.
But it should never have happened. But at the time, Man United thought that's all they could do. That's what they wanted to do, because they'd said to the last manager, Jose Mourinho, they weren't going to buy him for that price. And then they gave the next manager to him for 80 million quid. So it's stupid because, you know, like today with Ratcliffe saying we won't pay 20 million, it's kind of silly. Then you're going to hold him to that, because if tomorrow they went and paid 20 million for him, we'd all go, well, hang on a second, what did you say yesterday? But that's not going to happen. That's not what serious business people do. You kind of really dig your heels in and you go, well, I'm not doing it like that. And that is what I've wanted from an owner at Manchester United for such a long time. And we've now got, the Lingard comment there is a bit strange, because I think at the end of the day, Jesse Lingard actually went to West Ham, didn't he, before, and was really good for 6 months, got back in the England squad. So his value was different there. Now we look at Jesse Lingard and obviously he's playing in Korea. So, you know, it's all relative now, isn't it, as we look down the line. But I don't know, like we paid loan fees for all sorts of players, Scott. Like, you know, we did it for Reguilon recently, and today people are going, oh, we should have kept Reguilon, except for the fact that Reguilon was rubbish and that fee was burning a big hole in Manchester United's wallet. So, yeah, I don't know. But I don't think it's the same.
No, Rob, I'm prepared to sit there and say, oh, God, Lindelof playing at left back is a massive, massive problem for the now. Mm.
Yeah.
But also, I would prefer to have that massive, massive problem for the now rather than pay some kid who's not very good and further worsen the FFP position that's going to mean that we have to tread more carefully in the future to fix it.
If you want to look at it like that, because we've talked about wages so many times, if you put Reguilon's wages with everyone else's wages, there's every chance that you go over the FFP line and then in a year's time you're getting a points deduction. So what do you prefer? Do you want to bodge your defence for a few games or wait till Luke Shaw's back? I also talked today on Twitter, Scott, about Harry Amass. So is there a chance here as a 16-year-old that he's an incredible talent? It doesn't mean that he's going to be your week-in, week-out left-back, but it means you have got a left-back. Aaron Wan-Bissaka is 2 weeks away, 2 to 3 weeks. Obviously, Malacia, we think now might be longer and more serious. So he's still got options there, haven't you, in the back line? Not even talked about Kambuala, who can play at fullback. So you have got options. It's just whether you like the options. I certainly wouldn't have Reguilon ahead of any of those players I've just mentioned.
Right, let's
move
on.
He was rubbish. Let's be honest, his numbers were terrible. I had a conversation as well. I was at Old Trafford for one game and he was coming back into position. He was right in front of me and the ball went right past him and he just kind of did what's now becoming known as a Rashford, a little jog back. And I was like, at left back, you can't do that. You got to chase. And he never played. I don't think he started ever again.
He wasn't even in
game.
Tottenham's squad.
Yeah. Everyone at Tottenham went, why are you taking him? People I know at Spurs were like, you've taken this player. And they were like, this is people who work at Tottenham were like, you're not going to do well at United. And that was from the first day. So they saw that. And now he's at Brentford, isn't he? And I'm sure he might have some good games for Brentford. But no, I wouldn't have him at left back for Man United. No, thanks. We tried it for a little bit. Didn't work.
But my point is, you might need to grin and bear some decisions, which for the short term are a little bit painful.
Yeah.
If it means there's more flexibility in the future.
Absolutely.
And I would even talk about transfers in the summer that are made for that. Mm. But you just have to get on board with the fact that they are doing things in the best interest of the long-term future of the club. And I feel like that is... I've never made any secret of it, really. Even when we were doing the podcast, Rob, when it was Qatar versus Ineos. Mm. We never really said... We never took a side as such, but I wouldn't make any secret that this was the one I always preferred. This bid was the one I always preferred. And I don't think I did at the time, but I didn't want to shove it in people's faces because obviously you need to make your mind up. But that was, I just wanted some sense to be brought into this place rather than money. Sense, you know? Totally. But let's move on to the manager. Hmm. So he didn't comment on Erik ten Hag, right?
No.
People get at me for backing the manager blindly too much. But this is my point. There's so many issues outside of this. Why would you spend money sacking a manager and worsening your position and hire someone else if it turns out that you could fix the problems and maybe you give the manager you've got a better chance of succeeding? Mm. That's my whole position on this.
Mm.
And yeah. He's essentially not... He said, I'm not going to comment on Erik ten Hag because I think it would be inappropriate. But if you look at the 11 years that have gone since Gil and Alex Ferguson have left, there's been a series of coaches, some of which were very good. None of them were successful or survived for very long, and you can't blame the coaches. The only conclusion you can draw is that the environment which they were working didn't work. And Eric's been in that environment. I'm talking about the organization, the people in that structure, and the atmosphere. We have to do that bit. So I'm not really focused on the coach. And I completely agree. Completely agree with that. And he also made a comment as well. Why does the manager report to the CEO?
Yeah, mad.
Yes. What? You know, it's crazy.
It's crazy. No structure. Again, with any experience in business, you look at those things and they're weird. You look at them and kind of go, hang on, there should be these layers of management to the top. And yeah, sometimes you strip a few of those away to be able to make things run more efficiently. But for a manager to have to report to a CEO, you know what that means, Scott? It means he's doing way too much working to make a CEO happy. That's not his job. His job is to win football matches. He should be on a training pitch and do nothing else. you know, go and win football matches. And again, I think one of the telltale quotes that came out today when around that, he talks about a philosophy and a playing style. And again, paraphrasing, he says, we will decide the playing style. We will decide what Manchester United want to do on a football pitch. We will decide what players we'll bring to the football club. And the coach, whoever the coach is, will implement our style. I thought that game was very straight, because he's telling us, isn't he, the direction of the club. You never, ever got that before. Obviously, the Glazers didn't have a clue about football, so that's just what it was. But this was the problem with Richard Arnold, and obviously before that, Ed Woodward, who, again, self-styled director of football, as he was once called. You know, you can't have those people making these choices. You can't, because otherwise you're going to be bad. It's just as simple as that. Now you're going to have, hopefully, a better structure in there. And then Eric can go out and just coach. I actually think he'd be better just as a coach. You know, I really do. I don't think he should be scouting and running networks and trying to find the next player. A few people tweeted me actually off the back of that today and went, oh, it's still a manager that decides at most football clubs. And I'm telling you, it isn't. Most football clubs don't work like that at all now.
You think Roberto De Zerbi has all this control at Brighton? He's the new fashionable name. Like, they're not doing very well either this year.
The but last Roberto De Zerbi
was, you know, people might want Roberto De Zerbi at United. There was he comes in, he has the same issues to deal with the Ten Hag does.
Jamie Redknapp did a piece on Sky Sports a few days ago, and he talked about it, and he kind of said the same thing. He was like, oh, yeah, managers make the choices. And I was thinking about it. I was like, well, yeah, your dad did. You know, Harry Redknapp used to wheel and deal. That's not recent. That's somewhere down the line, and it's not how it works now. Coaches are given a mandate. They don't work budgets out, Scott. They don't sit there anymore and go, I've got 30 million, so where can I stretch it? That's not actually the job anymore. The job is to make sure that you make the first team win. The job isn't even anymore to develop the academy. Managers don't do that anymore. Whereas back in the Fergie day, that's what you did. You managed all the players, you bought players, you sold players, and that's how it worked. It does not work like that anymore. And I keep saying it, and people keep saying to me, oh no, that is how it works. It's like, it really isn't. Football manager does not work like that. You know, it's like, you're there to coach, and that is your individual job. Do you think Arteta can sit there kind of at Arsenal and talk to Edu and all of that? I'm sure he does. That's fine, because they're discussions, but he doesn't buy the player. You know, he doesn't go out and go and attain the player. That's up to Arsenal to do that.
Randy's just said here, De Zerbi didn't know who João Pedro was. And he's literally said that publicly.
He I don't even know if I want this player.
Pep like, said the same thing about Jeremy Doku as well.
Yeah.
And obviously Pep worked at Man City. And I know there's a lot of speak about not just looking at City structure, picking it up and implementing it at United. But guess who was the academy director at Man City? Jason Wilcox, the guy Man United are trying to get as their technical director.
Yeah.
So who's managing, you know, there are people within, there's a lot of people within football clubs. And when we talk about a spoke, like the center of the wheel, as Dan Ashworth refers to himself as, he would be the center and everything revolves around him.
Totally.
So the manager revolves
and the responsibilities on them. The responsibility. Yes. I think that's the key thing about United in 10 years, Scott. And this again, it's all about what Ratcliffe said today, is that there hasn't been that level of responsibility. And he even spoke about that from the boardroom. He was like, you know, the boardroom hasn't given direction to the football club over time. And again, I don't think that was a poke just directly at the Glazers, but he's talking more, I think, about the Ed Woodwards of this world and Richard Arnold, and you know, maybe even to an extent, the guy who's already the director of football there, who might not be in the very near future. And we all agree with it. We've said it countless times that Manchester United has been a rudderless ship for 10 years, and that's why you're not very good at football. You've had some of the best coaches in the world at the football club. You've had some great footballers, but none of it works unless you have a proper plan, a proper philosophy, and a proper direction. And Manchester United have not had that at all since Sir Alex Ferguson walked out the door.
Hacker, hello again, mate. I see you in several places. Chat here, weirdly articulate.
We like it. We like articulation here. I know there's a lot of shouting happening at the moment online around this. I've glanced myself just to see what others, obviously everyone else is doing, and competitors and fan channels and whatever. But people know we don't shout. We wanted to go live tonight, Scott, didn't we? Because we kind of wanted to cover all these bases before our next show.
Yeah, it's just too much. It's too much to wait for. But obviously lots and lots going on. He's called Dan Ashworth. I haven't got the quote in front of me. He said essentially said something about him being a 10 out of 10. And he said the dreaded words best in class as well.
You heard that Gary Neville's going to be helping with the direction around Old Trafford. So I think Gary's probably been in meetings spitting best at class at him. Hundreds of times. You need the best in class stadium at Old Trafford, which of course we will talk about. But yeah, he did. He called him a 10 out of 10. And I like the way he phrased that, because he was like, you know, we're only going for people who are 10 out of 10. And Dan Ashworth is one of them. We were like, I just like the way he phrases that, because it's a thought out response, isn't it? It's something that he thinks, and he's trying to execute that.
Any word on the Glazers? He's talked about the Glazers and their relationship. He said he's essentially met Joel and Avram, nobody else.
Yeah.
And he stuck up for them in a sense. Say they want the best for Man United. And I don't think anybody's ever really said that they're plotting the downfall of Man United from Florida, really.
No.
It's just more of a carelessness, right?
And it's just that they don't know anything about football.
They don't know anything. That's the thing. And he essentially said that, didn't he?
Yeah. What he said was like, he said that he's got to know them. And he said, it's funny like how friendships develop through adversity. And what he meant by that was obviously the last 12 months, it's been a kind of adverse situation of how long it's taken. It's been very stressful for both parties. And again, it does marry up with things I've been told in the past about the Glazers. And that is that they're not in the room bad people. Like, you don't go up to them and think that they are a nasty piece of work or that they're evil, and these things are things that Manchester United fans feel validly because of what's happened with the debt and all of those things and the fall of the football club under their kind of tenure. But what he kind of said was that, you know, I'm willing to work with these guys. We have legal agreements in situ now. And he was kind of like, but it won't be about the legal agreements. It will be about our relationship. And he said, they're happy for me to do this. We've agreed it. It's all now written down in stone. I'm getting on with the job. I'm basically making all the appointments. This is an Ineos project. Talked a fair bit about Ineos. And he was like, the Glazers will have very little to do with it. And that was his takeaway. He was like, that's it. You know, that's what we've decided. And we knew that. That's what we knew weeks ago. And we were like, okay, that's cool. Because we want the Glazers to have the least amount to do with the football arm at Manchester United as possible. Yes, they still sit on the board, the two brothers, but it really is just kind of Joel and Avram now. And the rest of the Glazer family has kind of just melted away into the background, because we knew from day one that they were all quite keen to sell parts of their shares and stuff. And this is what's happened.
He addressed that as well, didn't he? And he also said he hopes that they can let the finer details of who controls what in the drawer to collect dust.
Yes. Yeah. He was like, we know who does what. It's been decided. And he kind of even said something along the lines, again, paraphrasing, that he didn't think it was ever going to have to get to a point where legality meant anything. Like, we've got legal terms here and it's been agreed legally, but I don't think we'll ever get there because they trust us and we trust them. So it doesn't mean that something wouldn't change, Scott, somewhere down the line with the Glazers. Like, we all know that's a possibility. But I actually think that kind of the way it's been designed is that long term, what we'll actually see is a full Glazer removal. I'm completely convinced of that now. Stuff that I've seen and I've heard and spoken about, I really do think that this somewhere down the line, especially with Jim Ratcliffe being given control of the stadium, that tells me a lot, because that's the kind of thing that if you're an owner and you are going to keep the club, you're going to control that bit. You really are. You're going to control that because you want all of that to come back to you somewhere. The Glazers want their dividends. They're not actually interested in redeveloping Old Trafford themselves, and they're not really interested in Man United winning football matches. So it's up to Jim Ratcliffe, I think, now to push all of that, because he's now got legal control of all of those areas. And again, Scott, it's what we wanted. It's exactly what we wanted. So we got what we wanted.
The Glazers have been silent, right? Essentially silent owners. And that has been to the detriment of Man United. And now they can be even more silent, but everything that matters is now being assumed control of by Ratcliffe and the people that he brings in.
Yeah.
So
they can focus on the NFL now. That's what they want to do. They want to focus on Tampa Bay. So they can do that. Now, I know a lot of Tampa Bay fans that don't like them, but they have won two Super Bowls there in kind of a 10-year period or whatever it is, 15 years. But that's their passion. I think, you know, as much as I think they want Man United to win, they were never prepared, Scott, to do what it took to win. They just thought that you turned up on a football pitch and won. That's what they, you know, probably thought Sir Alex, that's all Sir Alex did. Well, Sir Alex was doing it from 1986, 1987 onwards. Took him, you know, 25 years to get to the apex, to the very, very end of that job. And I think the Glazers massively underestimated what it took to run a successful football club. I really do. And I think now they're kind of just admitted defeat. They were like, well, this guy wants to do it. He's a fan. He's a billionaire. He's the richest man in England. Let's give him a go. And I also think that they would like to get into bed with Ineos more. Ineos having all of these sports concerns around the world. I think the Glazers like a bit of that. They're into, like, at the moment, IPL and other sports they're looking at to invest in. I think they would like to kind of piggy bank off the back of that with Ineos and maybe do some more deals with them in other sports clubs.
He did obviously talk about the fact that he paid tax in the UK for 65 years. And yeah. Now, you know, obviously he was asked that question. There's been, we'll talk about the stadium in a little bit and where that investment, where that money is going to come from. But obviously, Qatar was another thing that did come up briefly. And when the announcement, I don't know if you saw this, Rob, when the announcement was made, Ineos's official communication on their social media channels was in the colors of the Qatari flag. I don't know if that was intentional or whether that was completely by accident, but I think that's quite a coincidence.
Peak trolling, that sounds
it
like.
It's fantastic. It's really, really
at the highest
clever.
Corporate levels.
It's really clever. Really, really clever. Yeah. And I've got to say, like, when I, because obviously I've been busy today, so I haven't actually sat there. I've read most of what he said, but when I saw the quote circulated about what he was asked about Sheikh Jassim and how he responded, he said, nobody's ever seen him, actually. The Glazers never met him. I'm not sure he exists. This is... What?
It could be me saying that.
For me and you to say that. Is it fine for me and you to say that? But the fact that he's gone and said that is... wow.
Is telling. And I think the thing is that we know that Sheikh Jassim kind of exists, but... When we did our due diligence on Sheikh Jassim...
I've seen about three pictures of him, Rob. I've seen about
three. Well, there's only about three pictures of him. Three pictures proves he exists or someone exists, don't they? Like, there's three pictures of him. But you would expect there to be a lot more pictures of him, let's be completely honest, in the modern day in 2024. But I always think, Scott, the scariest thing was that when we did due diligence on him and the beard and the consortium and the people who were involved, was that he's got his connection to Qatari banks and a banking system out there. And direct questions were asked to people who work in those systems. And they were like, what's it like to work with Sheikh Jassim? And the thing that came back continually from multiple people was, we don't know. We've never met him. So this is the bank he's supposed to run. And we don't know. We've never met him. So we didn't know at the time if that was spin. Like, they don't want us to talk to us or something like that. And there's some control factors there. Okay, that's fine. But where is he? Where are you, Sheikh Jassim? Like, can you at least get your phone out tonight, take a picture, set up a Twitter account and go, look, I do exist.
Do you think if they'd have won, we'd have got the same?
I think if they'd won, I think we would have just had Sheikh Jassim the name. And I think we'd have had a massive structure around Qatar running the football club. And that was something that I was very against. I was like, I don't want that.
I meant, would we have had a public appearance?
Well, you would like to think that a brand new owner would turn up at the football stadium like Jim Ratcliffe has. So Jim Ratcliffe's been at pretty much every game now since he bought his part of the club. But Sheikh Jassim, yeah, there was one or two pictures of him, I think, in an executive box in a United shirt, kind of doing a selfie and with a football pitch behind him. And we were trying to ratify it and go, we don't really know if that's real. Is that a Photoshop or what is it? It doesn't really matter at the end of the day.
AI is good nowadays.
AI is brilliant, yeah. And I think the bottom dollar is that every time it was thrown back towards Qatar and said, right, prove this, prove what you're saying is real. And it's not just a load of Twitter accounts. Because again, when we checked those Twitter accounts, they were all bots. And we were like, okay, that's not a good look. You know, all of those bots have continually been saying, haven't they, since day one, Qatar next, it's coming. You know, I feel Qatari. Like, okay, oh my God, how long is this going to go on for? And it was boring to the point, Scott, where you and me said, we're not doing it in any shows anymore. We actually you know, stood up and I said, didn't we, with our producer and all that, saying we're not doing that anymore. We're not going that line. No, because boring. So that's not real. So, like, we want to do real stuff on our show as much as possible. We want to totally, you know, we all talk hypothetically about players and transfers and one thing or another. But I think for Jim Ratcliffe to actually say that today in front of the whole of the UK and world press, I don't know if he exists. I think that's quite powerful, really, because no one from Qatar's come out today and gone, well,
I mean, what's he going to do? Send a video?
Running across the pitch at Old Trafford in a selfie or doing a wrap of
I do exist, actually, Jim.
I think he does exist, but I don't think he is who he is. And I think that's it.
I think so, he's a person that has been placed in front of that bid.
Yes, I think he's a real human being who does not have any real power. So I think that's who he is. And I don't think, you know, his personal wealth was around $1 billion, was kind of what we added up to. But again, we couldn't ratify that. And $1 billion wasn't enough to buy anything of Manchester United. Like, Jim Ratcliffe had to put $1.3 billion in just to get a seat at the table. So they were going to, what, buy the club for $6 billion or whatever? Well, as we said all the time, Scott, Qatar's got the money to do that, and they didn't. So there. That's your answer. So I think for Ratcliffe to say it like he did today, I think he said it in jest, but I also think there was some kind of serious element there, because all the journalists I know who were there at that table today were like, yeah, we don't know either. So like him saying that, we can't even say it back to him like, oh yeah, we know who Sheikh Jassim is because we've met them or something like that. So yeah, that was a big ruse, I think, for a whole year. And I think that kept this going, Scott, for a really long time with the Glazers. The Glazers obviously wanted to see what's in the market, and maybe they could have come to this deal 6 months ago if Qatar hadn't been playing these games all along.
I have posted some tweets this week sarcastically about Sir Jim being Glazer 2.0 and this being some of the rhetoric around when Sir Jim won the race was bad.
Scott, you can't do sarcasm on Twitter.
I quite like it. It's quite fun, but but you know, I think what I will say from the pod, and maybe you're with me here, Rob, if you were on fully 100% Qatar side and you were very against this, but now you've seen some the moves that they've made, it's fine, you can come back, it's okay. You know,
and they have. I think a lot of fans have. I think a lot of fans have now realized that they got played as well. And I feel sad for those United fans. And I, again, I've said that previously, that I think the whole Qatar thing was that they were selling a hope and a dream. And yeah, £6 billion for the club and Glazer's gone and, you know, go Simon Mbappe sounds all really exciting. A lot of football fans, that's all that floats their boat. And I was trying to say at the time, the difference, I think, for me, or the way I was looking at it just as a personal and as an individual, was that this is my family football club. We're Mancunians going back. Obviously, you can hear my accent's not very Manc, is it? Yeah, it's much more southern. And overall, I was kind of looking that United was looked after like that as a club from the Northwest. And I wasn't convinced that Qatar were going to do that. I didn't like the games they were playing. But saying that, Scott, say they had bought the football club, then we'd have had to have dealt with that reality, wouldn't we? You know, if they bought it, you and me would be doing shows looking at the finer details and scrutinising them in exactly the same way that we are going to scrutinise Ineos and Sir Jim Ratcliffe. Exactly the same way. We want to make sure that these custodians of our football club are doing the right things by our football club. It's massively important to me, that bit. Really is. That bit is really important.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Couple more topics to run through. We've been going 50 minutes or so. If you're still with us, thanks on YouTube. Big thanks. If you're enjoying the show, please give the stream a like. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't.
Hello to everyone
so.
In the comments.
Yeah,
lots of
hello
people
everyone.
In the comments. Hello,
hello everyone. We really appreciate the support, and there's lots of comments. To be fair, I mean, I could run through them all day, but also people. Yeah, it's late and I've had a long day. So
talk to each other in the comments.
Yeah,
talk to each other.
Really
we'll talk
appreciate
to you.
It. Just saying, yeah, subscribe wherever you get your podcast as well. We do audio as well. If you're traveling to work or something and you want to listen just with us in your ears instead, Apple and Spotify is where you can find us. The Promised Land of Man United podcast. We're also on YouTube as you're watching as we speak now. Like the video, subscribe, leave a comment as well. And the socials are @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC for the show as well. A couple of more topics that I'd like to talk about that we have established as the important ones. So another divisive issue, Mason Greenwood.
Mm.
We've not talked about him very much, right?
Mm.
Obviously, United made a complete mess of that situation. And I feel like if I've learned anything today is that already we've seen some kind of leadership that we haven't seen in a long time. Mm. And he hasn't committed. He hasn't said anything particularly that is one way or another pointing to which way this is going to go. Maybe on the stadium, we could read a bit more into that. And obviously, we'll get to that at the end of the show. But some stuff on Greenwood. He's confirmed that they'll make a fresh decision.
Mm-hmm.
We'll make a decision and we will justify it. That's quite an interesting sentence, actually.
I like that. Yeah.
And he said, I can talk about the principle. I'm not going to talk about Mason. I'm familiar with it. The principle is the important one. We will have other issues going forward. You're dealing with young people who've not always been brought up in the best circumstances, who have a lot of money and who don't always have the guidance that they should have. What we do need to do when having issues like that is understand the real effects, not the hype. And then we need to make a fair decision in the light of the club's values. That's what we need to do. And that's how we will deal with it. That is like, now that might not go down well with everyone.
That's right? A grown up.
But that is a grown-up way of assessing the situation. And my big thing on Greenwood, like my personal take is I think United should sell him. Mm. I do. I think United should look at, with everything that you weigh up with FFP and all the difficulties, the reintegration of Mason Greenwood is going to be a problem that I don't think is worth it. And I would say, and I understand if you don't want Mason Greenwood to play for the football club again, that is completely fine. I understand that. I think it'd be a very, very difficult thing to do to reintroduce him. But I also understand what Jim has said there, because that line about dealing with young people who have not always been brought up in the best circumstances, who have a lot of money and don't always have the guidance. These young kids are always told yes.
Mm.
You know, and like it's a big thing. And I feel like he's dealt with that in a very, very grown up way. And like I say, I have my own personal take on it. I don't want Mason Greenwood to play for the club again. But the way that he has dealt with that is the kind of level of maturity that I can respect personally.
Yeah, it's where a kind of personal moralistic side of it meets business, because the two things do reflect on each other. And I think again paraphrasing for what he said today was like, he said we need to judge Mason Greenwood like whether he could be a Manchester United player or whether he could do the role justice. And I actually quite liked him dialing it back to that, to about what, you know, is Mason Greenwood worthy to be at the football club? Because I think that's what it will come down to, Scott, is that they will make that choice at the end of the day, and they'll make it for their own good reasons, and they have to make it for the best laid reasons. And they even said there at the end of the quote, Jim Ratcliffe said, was, you know, we also have to see if Manchester United fans would like this or not. Now, we do know that in the Twitterverse, that half of Twitter loves Mason and shares memes of him every day playing in Spain and all of this. And I, as I said before, I think when I spoke to Old Trafford, a lot of the fans on site at games have gone the other way and said, you know, if he comes out Man United shirt, he will be booed. You know, it will never happen. So that went back to Richard Arnold. And that was exactly why Richard Arnold made the decision he made at that time. It was made crystal clear to Richard Arnold that you were going to get the biggest ever backlash at Old Trafford you've ever had, bigger than any Glazer backlash. And as soon as that came up and was on the table, Man United absolutely went, right, we can't do this. This will wreck the club. And you're not telling me that Jim Ratcliffe, the old conservative man that he is going to go down a route where he's going to rock that boat. So I think the thing is with Mason Greenwood is that that's the right thing to say, is that we are in charge of the football employment, so we will make that choice down there and we will justify it. I like that line, we will justify it, because they will explain what they'll do. But I think more than that, Scott, is that he's an asset. So you sell him. So if you can sell him and make some money on it, do you know what you do? You go buy someone else. You don't need that problem. Yeah. And unfortunately, Mason, you know, there's one time that, you know, I imagined him to be a future hero of the football club and I thought he was going to be fantastic. I first saw him play when he was like 16 and I thought, wow, great. And I thought the same about Ravel Morrison. And, you know, I felt the same about Paul Pogba when I saw him as a kid. It doesn't always work out for multiple different reasons, ultimately. You know, we talked about Luke Shaw a minute ago and we talked about Harry Amass coming in at 16. You know, you get these young players and you go, oh, wow, this could be someone special. Mason was nearly there, but unfortunately, we can't control what happens with Mason Greenwood off a football pitch or how he lives his life. So ultimately, if that's what it comes down to, I think United will need to sell him, take the money and run. Take the money and go and invest it in someone else, because we know that United will have transfer targets when it comes to the summer and they could do with the cash.
Yeah. Just reading the rest of the section that you said, that all I can do is talk about the principle of how we will approach decisions like that.
Yeah.
That's so important.
He says about other loans as well. He was like, there's other players out on loan and it's the same principle. He went, we have to look at every individual and we have to work under the same guise. And I also like the thing he said about young people, Scott, because I've said that on shows before and gone that these kids, I think I told a story, didn't I, once about when I was working at Arsenal and I was in there and we were filming and doing some work and all these cars were in the car park where we were parked and there were Ferraris everywhere. And I was like, oh God, what? I was like, with the first team here, I didn't realize it. I thought it was a day off. And one of the assistants asked, were like, no, that's the kids. That's the kids' cars. I was like, Ferrari, 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 Porsche, Ferrari, top of the line Range Rover, Ferrari, Ferrari. And these are 16, 17, 18 year olds. It's not right. You know, it doesn't help you become a mature individual, does it?
Can't drive at 16.
one of the lads that came in, who was coming to get his keys off reception, was one of the youngest lads, and he couldn't even get in the Ferrari. He was like, he was so small and short, and he was one of the kids. He was in the youth team, and I was like, I thought it was like quite funny, but then you think, must be, it's a weird world. It's not normal, you know, that you're at that age, and we're talking. And even Garnacho got his contract recently, Scott. And we're talking about that, and when Paul Pogba was at United and went to Juventus. Even though we're only talking tens of thousands in those days, and now we're talking millions, still a lot of money for a kid. You know, Ravel Morrison couldn't handle it at Man United, and he was probably the most blessed individual talent that we've ever had in a 20 or 30 year period, and he never even put the shot on once for United in the end. So just what happens sometimes. I think Mason Greenwood, he will go and have a career somewhere. I just don't think that career will be at Old Trafford.
Yeah, that's my stance on it as well. And he has... He said, he was asked about it. Are you saying you're not closing the door? He's a Man United footballer, so we're in charge of football. So the answer is, yeah, we have to make decisions. It's quite clear we have to make one. There's no decision that's been made. He's on loan, but he's not the only one. We've got one or two footballers that we have to deal with, and we'll make a decision on, so we will do that. The process will be understand the facts, not the hype, and then try and come to a fair decision on the basis of values, which is basically, is he a good guy or not? And could he play sincerely for Man United well? And would we be comfortable with it? And would the fans be comfortable with it?
There we go.
So like,
he's answering it without answering it.
But it's such a mature, and like the guy's 71. Of course, he's going to be mature, but like sensible, like take on it.
You remember we did our show when it all broke, the Mason Greenwood news, and we did our show, and we did the at the end of it when United had come to their conclusion after months of investigating, and it was all from the mouth of. Richard Arnold, and it was gobbledygook, so much just double speak in it. And I read it and I was like, man, I would feel bad if our company was putting that out, because that's so bad. And this is the biggest football club in the world, supposedly, yeah, and trying to deal with something that we've had at least a year to deal with now, 18 months, and it was all gobbledygook. And what Jim Ratcliffe said there made more sense in like three or four sentences than Manchester United made in all the time that was going on with Mason.
And he's doing that in a conversation, not a prepared statement.
Yeah. To this day, just to put a cap on Mason, to this day, Mason Greenwood still hasn't come out, sat down, and spoke properly about what happened. And that's enough for me. The fact he hasn't done that is enough. That is like, well, we don't need to go any further than that. And that's that. You know, it doesn't matter what people think on Twitter. You know, Mason could have come out and done a charm offensive and talked candidly about their relationship or their past and all this. None of that's happened. He's gone to Spain and kicked a football around. So that's okay. So, you know, we leave it there, don't we? And, you know, make some money on him. You can make some money and use that money on another player. Manchester United will just continue.
Leave that to be.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Somebody else's issue for me.
Yes.
That's the right way to approach it. He did some talk about Ineos and Nice and essentially said, he talked about Chelsea. Rob, there's so much stuff. Like I said at the top, there's too much stuff to
paraphrase
talk about today. But he essentially said that Chelsea are nothing in comparison to Man United, didn't he?
He said all the London clubs.
All the London clubs.
And it's true, isn't it? Like, let's be honest, like Arsenal, they're not much cop, are they? You know, Tottenham, you know, they're all just small teams in London.
Very interesting that, but I need to find the section around Old Trafford. I do know, I have heard what he said.
Hmm.
I'm trying to dig it up for the sake of this, but there's a lot to tread through. Yeah. But Old Trafford, right? He was asked what his plans are, and he talked about revamping the current Old Trafford. And yes. I believe he said the words would not be perfect.
Mm. Yes.
And then he went on to say and talk about if they did make a new ground on the area that we discussed on the last show, obviously that they're involved with the council and they have decisions to make and nothing's been decided there. But it does seem his preference, and I think he essentially confirmed it as much, his preference does seem to be that if they can do it, a new Old Trafford is going to be the plan. And I don't think he would go that far as to say it if he wasn't confident that it could happen.
We know behind the scenes that that's exactly what he is saying. So we've known that for a little while. One of the things he said today was he talked a little bit about cost implications and timings. And again, we have covered that in our previous shows when we first did our first Old Trafford show. But like he said today that if we were going to do a refurb job, and he said, you know, 80,000 to 90,000, you know, as a stadium, and we could go down that route. He said it would cost about one. And what he meant by one was billion. So it cost about 1 billion to do the refurb job. But then he's kind of counterpointed himself and said, well, the problem is, of course, is the train line. He said, so we don't like the train line. It's always been a problem for Manchester United. It's something that United continually tried to work around. They've bought bits around the train line to be able to execute certain laws and stuff so they can build, but it's not ideal. So that's kind of where he went. But then he followed it up, Scott, by saying, you know, and this is what he was impassioned about, he was like, you know, why does the North not have a stadium of a Wembley Stadium, national stadium size, yet the North pays just as much taxes as the South? Now, I thought it was quite interesting that he went down that route, because that was a kind of funny route to take.
But it's such a way broader. It's way broader than football, right? He talked about HS2, you know, and lots of stuff, and how the North has been. But obviously, I live South.
Yeah.
But, you know, lots of, he pointed to Wembley and to the Olympics and to Stratford, the Olympic Stadium, and lots of stuff, and how the North has been essentially neglected. So he feels as though that a regeneration of the area around Old Trafford and bringing attractions that can host, what did he say they could host? I'm going to say WrestleMania just because I think
it's funny.
But you know, they don't really have a stadium that could do that currently in the North.
No.
But to bring something modern and like state of the art to that area of the world, you know.
Yeah, we mentioned Tottenham last, don't we? And they've both got big stadiums. So it's like, you know, they're in London. Then you've got Wembley, which is kind of squashed down the sides of London. It's not all within a kind of stone's throw of each other, isn't it? So I think the thing is that there's two ways of looking at this. So Jim Ratcliffe, we know by trade, is a raging Tory. He's a conservative, without a doubt. Tory party donor. That's his background. That's where Ineos, you know, in terms of the like, this is why he is a sir, you know, but this is why he has his accolade there on his name, you know. Has he earned it? Maybe, maybe not. But I think the whole thing is that we see now that with the change of government and the way that he's now doing what he's doing back in Manchester, that there is some other motivation for him to go down this route. Yeah. And the whole thing is that if he builds a new Old Trafford there on that site, he used some really like key examples, Scott. Like he was like, when people come, he said, like, you know, that we should have a campus here that can accommodate all these fans and we don't. And he said something along the lines of like, when the kids come here, we've got like an Xbox outside there for them to play on. And that's us. And he said, used the words, and it's crap. I think that's what he said. And I was like, do you know what? It is crap, because I've taken my kids there and I've used that Xbox and I've gone, this is not particularly very good. This is the biggest club in the world and they've got an Xbox and a little cage where they can kick a ball around, but yet there's 75,000 people. It doesn't really make any sense to me what's going on. That's why we quip about the Wi-Fi, because it's like, yeah, biggest club in the world, but can't have Wi-Fi. It's like, okay. But I think Jim Ratcliffe looks at that and he looks at Old Trafford as that, as the project that he could put his name on. And that you could build this super stadium in the northwest of, have you said 80,000, 80,000 to 90,000 on rebuild, Scott? That made me think when I heard that. I thought, does that mean 100,000 seats?
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
Because, and that's what I wanted. You know, I know we've done shows on that, and I did a big clip on that and said I really want 100,000 seats stadium, because that is the point that I made before about Dallas Cowboys and their stadium, is that you want the best for your fans, you go build it, and you tell them then to come. And you're not gonna stop Man United fans from all around the world coming to that stadium. You're just not, and it will be amazing. And he also did talk, Scott, about a deconstruction of the original Old Trafford. So he said we'd keep that. He said, and another thing he said like, I'm laughing now because I'm just remembering bits from it. But he said, oh, like, you know, we've got the museum and that's rubbish. And it's like, yeah. And he said, and club shop's rubbish. And it's like, yeah, they are. They're all rubbish. Like you go in the club shop on a match day and you're like this, walking around, because it's like nasty. It's like being on the tube at 5 p.m. In London. It's not particularly pleasant and quite smelly. So I think he's got all of these motivations to do this. But of course, the real motivation is for Man United to win. And the stadium is connected to that. If you have the best stadium and you're getting the best revenues from that, you pump that back into footballers and back into players. One extra bit, Scott, you said about Carrington. Did you hear that bit at all? Because I know you went on that.
I was just going to go down a different path, but you go for it.
So just with Carrington, he said, I've been to Carrington. He said, I don't think it's that bad. He went, I've been to Carrington. He said, I know people have talked about it. We can upgrade bits and pieces. But to me, he said, it's not a priority at all. Now, I think it's quite interesting, because we have talked a lot about the training grounds in the past and saying about moving United away from Carrington. So it seems, you see, that they've already made that choice already. He's going in on the stadium, and I am not wasting 200 million on the training grounds. I'm just not doing it. It's going into the stadium, and I don't want these Xboxes, and I don't want that. I don't want the club shop there, and I don't want to do this. And he wants to retain Old Trafford, as he did by name, said the women's team would play there, and he said obviously the youth teams would play there as well, and that then keeps that heritage, doesn't it? You know, it's what you're not a lot of United fans are worried about.
It's quite magic, isn't it?
It's well really. Thought out.
Like, I know we've talked about it, like potentially happening on previous shows, but this is what you said. If you use that as a center of regeneration, a bit like the Olympic Village, then I think what you probably finish up doing is Old Trafford would end up being reduced in size to a smaller facility, still in the same footprint, but a smaller facility, which can be used for all sorts of community things, be it a concert or whatever. The women's teams could play there. The academy teams could play there. Some of the local teams could play there, and Old Trafford could sort of become a community asset, and then you'd have this World Cup, world-class stadium next to it.
Amazing.
Isn't that like the perfect scenario? Because
totally.
I'll take the youth team as a specific example here, and we talked about this on previous shows, how much stock United put into their youth development and how a youth player has been in the team for 80-plus years, every single bloody squad. For 80 years, and how important that is, and how you want to retain your tradition, you want to retain your identity, but you have to move stadium because you feel like it's the good thing to do to take the club forward. But you still manage to retain that identity by putting the very thing you put in your squad every week for 80 years. You make them play on the turf that has been so crucial to the history of the club in the first place. So it's a really nice narrative to develop if you're going to move.
Totally. And I think as well, and I said this on the show about emotion, you cannot allow this to be an emotional decision, but you have to consider the emotion. So you have to think, well, we need that stadium next door, that new 100,000 seat stadium. We really do to attract players, to attract.
It has to be 100,000 now. You said that, by the way.
It has to be 100,000. I'm going to campaign for that. I'm not getting off that. I don't want 93,000 or something like that. I just, you know, give me 100, just 100, you know, size matters. But I think when it comes down to it is that, if you can retain Old Trafford, and because you own the land, then that's fantastic, and retain it and use it for what it should be. And that, yeah, it just will end up becoming almost like a grand museum, and it will be, you can take it back to the original parts there. You can keep that pitch. You can have games still there. You can have all sorts there on that site, and it still is really important. And he talked there about a community asset. That's the way I look at it. It's like this for the community of people who live in that area. That's what that stadium is. He talked again about the history of people who work in that area. And he said about, you know, why Old Trafford is there, why the stadium is there, why the team moved to Old Trafford, why they play their games there. And all of that is still relevant today. And do you know what, Scott? It's better than, say, other clubs when they left their stadiums. When Arsenal left Highbury, Highbury's now a block of flats. Yeah, it's a very nice one. And the pitch is still there in the middle, I believe. And you can take one of the flats on the outside. But it's a block of flats. You know, Main Road is now a bus garage, right? So, you know, we don't want that for Old Trafford. Like, we don't want those things for Old Trafford. We don't want it to be frivolously, like, you know, pushed away. But we do have to realise that we need a brand new stadium. You know, if you want a brand new football club, and I think that's what a lot of United fans want, is a football club that goes into the next millennia and kind of proves itself, then you have to modernize. You cannot just stay in that old building that's dilapidated and crumbling. And he made that point today. He was like, you know, he said the stadium's not very good. And it was like, it really isn't. And we've said that on our show, and we've been criticized for it. But a lot of people say to me, oh, you're not a real United fan. You go there, you must hate going there. I'm like, no, I love going there. I've been going there since I was 9, you know, but I see it for what it is, and it's special, and I've got all the memories there, and those memories are up here in my head. They don't need to be.
They still exist on video as well.
Yeah, they still exist on video, and I don't need the cast iron girders around Old Trafford to touch them to remember it either. You know, that's just bricks and mortar, and I think bricks and mortar, if you're going to have it, then have it good. You know, have the best that you can have. And Manchester United deserves the best, and Manchester United fans deserve the best stadium possible. And
Man United are so far behind everybody else that if they go and make developments to match what's current, or put them on the same level as what's current, they'll still be behind in 20 years.
I think that's so, why he said about the 80,000. That's why he said, oh, it'll be all right. And then he was like, but, and I was like, yeah. It's a nice way of phrasing it again, just to make people understand. Because
you need to make, United have spent 10 years not going, standing still, and therefore going backwards because everyone's caught them up. They need to make a statement. And there's no better way to make a statement that, hey, we're back, listen to us, we're serious again, than by putting your football team in the best stadium in the world and endeavouring to play the best football in the world.
And you never
Pep ain't going to last forever at City, by the way. Like, Klopp's leaving Liverpool. Pep's not going to last forever at City. This, where United will be in the next 3 years, if they play their cards right, they're in the mix. Don't get me wrong. They're
window opportunity.
It's a big window. Arsenal are there as well. All of the clubs are. But yeah, United have just as good a chance if they get things right.
It's all to play for. And as I said, I think a regeneration of the whole area would take around 10 years, but the stadium project would be 5 and below that. And if that's something that, say, they pulled the trigger on quite quickly, and let's be honest, we're seeing with Ineos that they like to operate relatively fast. They like to keep the get going. And we know that they've commissioned architects over a short period of time from last year, when United did it, to their own architects now, the same ones that did the Tottenham Stadium, is that they're looking at all of their options. And I think that, I don't know, Scott, could we get to the summer that quickly? And could they go, right, we just made a decision on it. We're doing this, and we're going to start erecting the new stadium there. We'll keep this stadium here for 2 or 3 years before we do anything to that. And that means all the season ticket holders still get to go, like myself, still there every single week. And then we make this kind of smooth transition to a new stadium. I'd be delighted with that. I really, really would, because, you know, like I've said before, Stretford is Manchester United. It's not a building. And I think, you know, for me, if you get that brand new building there and you can show that it's the best stadium in the world, how exciting would that be to have the best stadium in the world, 100,000 seat stadium, bigger than Wembley Stadium, better than Wembley's rubbish. Like, be honest, Wembley's a rubbish stadium.
That is
a soulless brick, you know, stadium. I don't want that at United.
I could have gone to the League Cup final this weekend. I just don't want to.
It's horrible.
You know, it's
a horrible stadium.
Not because Chelsea are playing Liverpool either, but because it's a nightmare.
It's honestly not nice. Horrible to get in and out. It's just not nice. But I think this is just a massive opportunity for Stretford and the surrounding areas of Old Trafford to be able to regenerate, because they do deserve it. And I was really happy to hear Jim Ratcliffe kind of sing the same kind of song today and say, no, it's the people around here that deserve this stadium, and that's what we want to deliver. Man, like, can you imagine a Glazer ever saying anything like that? Like, the actual people that own the club from before, they've never said anything like that. They don't know anything about the club. They just own it. And it's just, as I said before, like New York Yankees baseball caps. That's how they view Man United, is just a brand. At least Jim Ratcliffe, I think, sees us as something a little bit more relevant than that.
Right. Let's wrap it there, because we've been going for a while. It's late for us.
Could have kept going so much.
Could keep going, and maybe we'll pick up next on Friday morning. We'll be back then. But this is I yesterday tweeted when the confirmation came out that it was a monumental day. I don't know what you said, Rob, but I'm sure you've been tweeting a lot. I haven't really been on Twitter too much, but things are different. Let's just say that things are going to be different from now on.
Yeah,
no more hopelessness. There's hope.
I didn't tweet, right? And do you know why I didn't tweet? Because I was just going to tweet the work starts now, because that's how I feel. Like, that's how I feel now. Like, I've got my business head on. I'm like, right, this is it now. You got what you wanted. Ineos have got billions of pounds. Jim Ratcliffe's the richest man in the country. You've got enough. Man United effectively can be the richest club in the country and in the world again one day. You've got stuff ready to go now, oven cooked. You just got to put it in the oven. And I think that's the way it goes now. Build a squad, give Erik ten Hag what he needs. If Erik ten Hag can't prove himself in the interim, then you'll go with someone else. That's okay. And I think you just take the project one step at a time now. And that's why I said 3 years for me might be being a little bit optimistic. But yeah, like, if that's your ambition, then go for it. You know, if you can do it in 3 years, Liverpool might fall off now. Like, you know, they want Xabi Alonso. Are they going to get him, Scott, now with Bayern Munich looking for a new coach?
I wonder.
Yeah, I wonder. I actually think that might go south for Liverpool now.
Everybody loves Xabi Alonso. Let's remember, he's had 60-odd, 70-odd games as a manager. Erik ten Hag.
Even that, is he?
Erik ten Hag was one of the best managers in Europe at the time.
Yeah.
Before he joined Man United, yeah, everyone will look at Xabi Alonso for his one season's worth of work at Bayer Leverkusen, or one and a half seasons, and think he's the greatest manager in the world.
Well, everyone's got to prove it, Eric included and the players included. And I think now they're going to have a window between now and the end of the season to show Jim Ratcliffe and to show Ineos and to show, you know, the new sporting director who's in his garden for the next ever how long, that they're worthy of those jobs. And it should be about that, Scott. It should be about sport and it should be about football, and you prove it on the football pitch. That's what matters. One thing extra we'll just add, end the show with, Jim Ratcliffe said he's watched United obviously a lot this year because he's wanted to. He always watches United, but he's like, I actually quite like the team, quite like what we're doing, quite like some of the football. It's quite exciting. He didn't have to say that. Didn't he? Really didn't have to say. He could have just dodged that completely. But I actually think that he does feel that genuinely, but they need to build. And he also did highlight that we are nowhere near Man City. That was one of the things he said. He was like, City are way ahead and we need to learn from our own noisy neighbours. So there was a lot of that kind of posturing. But I like it because I agree with him. I think we do have to learn from City in that context. And we do have to find a style of football now. That's a big thing for me now. Next 6 months, find a style of football, Scott. So when we're doing pre-season, you and me, and we're doing something around pre-season for work, yeah, we go, oh, we saw a style of football, because we didn't see it this pre-season. We know why. We understand why. And we know there was injuries. But that's the next step for Man United, is that you've got something that you can say is the Manchester United way. That is really, really important now in 6 months' time.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch us on YouTube, the Promised Land of Man United podcast. Like the video, subscribe, leave a comment for us as well. Hit the notification bell so you never miss a show. We'll be back on Friday. Follow us on social media at @_ScottSaunders on X, Instagram, TikTok, @_Rob_B on X and YouTube, and at @TPLMUFC on X. This has been the Promised Land. This is our latest edition we might have ever done. And I need to call this a day now.
Scott's tired. I'm tired as well. It's been a long day.
I've managed to get through this without telling anybody that I've had a good few drinks tonight as well.
So, and now you've spoiled it, haven't you?
I tell you what, I think I've done a pretty good job for
I think you're starting to slur a little bit there now, Scott. So I
might have done it once or twice.
You're celebrating this day, aren't you?
Yeah.
New studio for 90 min, new office.
New studio, two, 3 weeks.
New owner for Man United.
New owner for Man United. All is changing. Anyway, we'll be back. Harry ranting coming. Porto 1, Arsenal 0 in the Champions League. Let's leave that. Enjoy that one, Harry. And enjoy your next couple of days, everyone. We'll see you Friday. Until then, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. It's been the Promised Land. See you soon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.